What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And guys, we are fresh off of UFC Qatar, which was amazing. Might I say, one of the best fight nights I was able to watch of the entire year. So we're going to be recapping all the action on today's episode about what went down, big main event, big co-main event, a lot of big fights actually throughout the entire card. And what's next for each and every one of the fighters, whether they're staying, going, or moving up in the world. Also going to be looking at the final two events of the year for 2025 before we get into 2026, as there has been no new news on fights for 2026. So I'm thinking we may have to wait till after the 2025 slate is 100% wrapped up. Then we can actually see what's going to be going down on the new Paramount deal with the UFC. As well, we're going to have our WWE Survivor Series predictions. That is right, Survivor Series War Games, I believe they call it. San Diego goes down this upcoming Saturday. Very exciting stuff. I'm looking forward to it. Also, if you weren't aware, Stranger Things, the final season, comes out this Wednesday, or at least part of it. It's like going to be like three parts or something. So that's going to be something exciting. I'm going to be probably recapping on a future episode. But in terms of this one, going to be going over Survivor Series, what we think is going to happen, what we're going to drop some predictions, and then we're going to be recapping UFC Qatar as we get into this end slate of the year for all sorts of things. So everything just kind of wraps up at the end of the year. That's just how it goes down. But in terms of the WWE, I mean, they are always going every single Monday, Tuesday, Friday, sometimes Saturdays. They are just crazy. And we have the fourth or fifth biggest PLE of the year. That is Survivor Series War Games. On the promotional poster is Bronson Reed, Bron Breakker, and Paul Heyman. The Vision, if you will. And in terms of this Survivor Series, look, there's no storyline, really. All right, they've been kind of trying to cook up storylines, but the entire theme of a War Games match, if you don't know, if you're not familiar with WWE, is you basically have good guy team, bad guy team. They're in, this is so funny, they're basically in like prison cages, and then they are released, and they're able to run to the ring to then help out their friends who are wrestling in a steel cage, which takes up two wrestling rings. It is so crazy to actually say that out loud. You have to be an avid wrestling fan to know exactly what these matches are. But we have a women's War Games match and a men's War Games match every single year. And in terms of right now, Sunday night, November 23rd, we have two other matches on the card. So they might sneak a fifth in. It's just become a staple of what Triple H does, but we're going to go with what we have now because with it being Thanksgiving, I'm going to be swamped this week, so we're only going to be dropping one episode. So dropping in here, you know, first matchup, Stephanie Vaquer versus Nikki Bella for the Women's World Championship. It's, you know, it's so obvious that Vaquer is going to win, but, you know, maybe they do a shock Nikki Bella win. I don't see it. I really don't. You know, Nikki Bella turned heel for the first time since 2018, which was just so predictable. We saw it coming, and no one cares. Like, I hate to say it, no one wants to see Nikki Bella. Like, Nikki Bella was this stuff in the mid-2010s, but now in the 2020 era, no, we do not need to see any Nikki Bella. So there's really not much to say here. I just hope she can put on a better match than she's been having on Raw, than she had at Clash in Paris. Maybe Stephanie Vaquer can bring out the best in Nikki Bella, but this should be a layup for Stephanie Vaquer. Very excited to see that matchup, though. Hopefully it is entertaining. I'm not even going to be able to watch this. I'm pretty sure I will be working when this event begins. And speaking of beginning, this is going to be the beginning of a WWE going to very interesting stadiums as they're going to be at Petco Park in San Diego, California for this. And if you weren't aware, Petco Park is outdoors in a baseball field. So I'm very curious what the layout is going to look like. I feel like there's going to be a lot of poor seating, if you ask me. So I'll be very interested to see the layout, the setup, but do keep your eyes on that. This stage, I hope, is very cool, and I have no idea what they're going to do. But next up will be the Women's War Games match. And, you know, I will say out of the past few years of Women's War Games matches, this one has tried a bit more. You know, with the men's, there always tends to be some storyline. This year, it's very loose leaf storyline compared to the past few years. But for this Women's War Games match and everyone in the past, it's really a bunch of baby faces get together, a bunch of heels get together, and then they just match up. So this year, your Women's War Games match is Rhea Ripley, Io Sky, Alexa Bliss, Charlotte Flair, and AJ Lee taking on Nia Jax, Lash Legend, the Kabuki Warriors, and Becky Lynch. So just to give you the rundown on how this all came together, basically Rhea Ripley and Io Sky, rivals throughout the year. They've been teaming up. They've been feuding with Asuka and Kairi Sane, who are the Kabuki Warriors, and those two began their feud. Then, that was going down on Monday Night Raw. We're going over to Friday Night SmackDown. Alexa Bliss and Charlotte Flair are feuding with Nia Jax and Lash Legend, who I believe is coming over from NXT. And then they cross paths, and then they were all on the same team. And then Becky Lynch was, feuding for some reason with AJ Lee, and they just stuck them together. It's legit just how it went. So this is going to be fun. I am going to predict that the baby faces win. That's just what always seems to happen with the Women's War Games match. And honestly, I hope that it ends with AJ Lee submitting Becky Lynch, because that would be very awesome. But yeah, Women's War Games matches, never really as good as the men's. But, you know, I'm thinking with the level of talent you have here. I mean, Rhea Ripley, Io Sky, Alexa Bliss, Charlotte Flair, AJ Lee, Becky Lynch, Asuka. We have a bunch of the goats for women's wrestlers in professional wrestling history. So this should be a recipe for success. There's really not many expectations with this. So when you come in with little expectations, the ability to blow people away is far greater. Then next up will be John Cena's second to last wrestling match. And he'll be defending his WWE Intercontinental Championship against Dominic Mysterio. And it's just kind of, you know, unfortunate. We already saw this match. They already cooked on Monday Night Raw. And they've just decided to run it back, which, if you weren't aware, Dominic Mysterio is so very clearly going to retain here. San Diego is his hometown. Or not retain. He's going to win back the Intercontinental Championship. It's just going to be weird watching John Cena lose here. It really is. I mean, if John Cena wins, it would shock everyone, because this is the biggest layup to just have him lose that I've ever seen. So John Cena, the pop is going to go crazy. Everyone loves Dominic Mysterio too. I'm sure Rey Mysterio will be involved in this to some degree, but yeah, John Cena is sadly probably going to lose to Dominic Mysterio, which I just don't want. I just don't want that. You know, what I want is John Cena to win his last few matchups, and especially with the just the speechlessness I have for this Last Time Is Now tournament on who's going to face John Cena. I mean, as of right now, like, the final people he could potentially wrestle, it's Jey Uso, it's LA Knight, it's, I think, who else is there? Maybe, who else is even in this? Carmelo Hayes? Like, it's a piss poor thing. And Gunther's the front runner as well. So if it does end up being Gunther, I hope that John Cena wins. But if it ends up being someone like Carmelo Hayes, I would love to see Carmelo Hayes be the one to beat John Cena. But it's going to be a real telltale of who ends up being John Cena's final opponent, on what direction we're going to go with. But in terms of here, I just hope John Cena and Dominic Mysterio tear the house down, do a bunch of callbacks to other wrestlers, and we just get as much as we can of John Cena. Because as of right now, we will get to see him this upcoming Saturday, the 29th, and then on his retirement match on the 14th. I believe it is 14th or 13th. I can't recall. I think it's the 14th. I think it's a Sunday. Sorry. Oh, no, it's Saturday night's main event. It's the 13th. My bad. So that should be exciting. And then we get into the main event, and they could always add another matchup in here. Ia Dragunov doing an open challenge. Maybe we have the finals of the Last Time Is Now tournament. I don't know how far along we're going to be. Maybe we get a tag team match or something. I don't know, but there's always room to add something exciting. Maybe the Women's United States Championship or Intercontinental Championship gets featured on here. We'll have to see. But as of right now, the final confirmed matchup, and, you know, it is a big main event. You know, I'll say that for certain, but it's just, they've just strung together people, and it's, you know, it's a bit sloppy. It's no, what's a Bloodline storyline. It's not like last year when it was like, actually, it's all been the Bloodline up until this year. But this year, you have CM Punk, who's your World Heavyweight Champion, Cody Rhodes, who is your WWE Champion, The Usos, Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso, and Roman Reigns taking on The Vision, Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed, Logan Paul, Drew McIntyre, and Brock Lesnar. And for starters, I would love the heels to win. I really would, and I really hope the heels win, but we need to be realistic. You really think they're going to allow CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, The Usos, and Roman Reigns to all lose? I don't know. I really love for that shock value, but as we've seen, Triple H just played it safe the last few years with Survivor Series or War Games, whatever. But what I would love to see here is maybe, you know, CM Punk and Roman Reigns having disagreements. Maybe a Jey Uso heel turn would be kind of exciting. I don't know if Cody Rhodes maybe, you know, just doesn't get along with them or something. We'll have to see. But It's been pretty chaotic. And if you want to know about the entire storyline, you can watch it on, you know, WWE's YouTube. You can go read it on Wikipedia or some page. But it's as simple as the Vision were basically wanting to wrestle CM Punk or Braun. In a weird way, Bronson Reed and Braun Breaker both wanted a World Heavyweight Championship shot, more specifically Braun Breaker. And it was originally Logan Paul who had been wanting to wrestle CM Punk. And then Logan Paul, for some reason, sided with the Vision so that they wouldn't beat him up, and instead they'd all beat CM Punk up. And then, of course, Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso come to the rescue. And then, somewhere just on SmackDown, we start seeing like them cross paths again. And Drew McIntyre comes and joins them. And then Cody Rhodes is feuding with Drew McIntyre. So he comes out. And then Brock Lesnar is, of course, with CM Punk. He is with Paul Heyman. So that is revealed as the fifth member, which is pretty awesome, if you ask me. And then who's going to be the fifth member? Oh, my gosh, everyone's getting beat up. It's Roman Reigns. So it is going to be fun. It is a bunch of just star power. It's just a bunch of big names in a match. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I would love to see the heels win, but you got to go with the baby faces here. You really do. There's just no way WWE would have CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, and Roman Reigns all on the same team and not have them win. And this is all going to be about creating viral moments. Last year's moments with CM Punk and Roman Reigns were some of the most viral clips WWE's ever put on. I mean, hundreds of millions of views on one single, like, one-minute video, which is crazy for WWE. So, very curious on how it goes down, but I don't know. I am going to just predict that the babyfaces win. Babyfaces win all the way around, retains all the way around. But, yeah, I just hope it's going to be entertaining, exciting, and, you know, this last episode of Monday Night Raw was really good, probably one of the best of the year, if you ask me. So I'll be very curious to see what they try and do post Survivor Series, because after Survivor Series, it's all going to be about the John Cena retirement tour. That's all anyone's going to care about, and anything else is filler until that's over. And it honestly feels like when the John Cena retirement tour ends, when he wrestles his final match on December 13th and Saturday night's main event in Washington, D.C., that the year ends. That's what it feels like. The other 3 weeks of the year don't even matter, if you ask me. I just think that feels like when the year really ends. So I'll be very interested to see what storylines we get coming into 2026, when we, of course, have the Royal Rumble, Elimination Chamber, which is going to be in Chicago, so I'm really probably going to try and save some money and go to that. And then, of course, WrestleMania 42, which, I don't know. WWE has a lot to make up for after last year. Last year, you know, Royal Rumble and Elimination Chamber were awesome. And WrestleMania was such a letdown. It was a consumer fest. It was an ad fest. It was zero fan service. It was almost like WWE looked at everything the fans loved and were just sucking the life out of it. But there were some highlights to it. One of those being the match between CM Punk, Roman Reigns, and Seth Rollins. And the fact that we are for sure going to have Roman Reigns and CM Punk on the road to WrestleMania is going to make it even better. So those are my Survivor Series thoughts, Survivor Series War Games 2025 predictions. And yeah, we'll be recapping it after November ends. So heading into December, we will be recapping it and that's going to be a stressful week for me, because I will be working from December 1st to December 7th. Why? Because I'm a corporate slave. Or, well, I guess I'm not going to be a corporate slave forever, but for the time being, I am, which is basically I've accepted my position. Anyways, we'll keep this moving along, and we are going to get right on into our UFC Qatar recap. A lot went down. A lot went down, and I'm going to be honest, there really isn't any prediction I made. Like, of the five I got wrong, there isn't any where I was shocked by it. You know, I wasn't shocked by any incorrect predictions I had. None whatsoever. So, we have 14 matchups to talk about here today. We're going to talk about the implications to the rankings, what's next for each and every fighter, and what I thought on every fight. So, without further ado, here's your official recap of UFC Qatar. Kicking off the card was a little heavyweight action as the debuting Denzel Freeman took on the debuting Marik Bujo. And this did have me a little worried about how the card would start out, as this was a boring fight. I'm talking Ngannou and Derek Lewis of the modern generation. Just two guys holding their punches. Really were. Denzel Freeman ended up outstriking him 49 significant strikes to 31. That's about it. And round three was the worst round. 21 significant strikes to 3 in favor of Denzel Freeman. I mean, Marik just wasn't throwing or landing anything. It was abysmal. It was pathetic. And yeah, both these guys are, I'm sure they'll come back. You know, they're going to invite both these guys back. But Marik Bujoh moves to 6-1 following the defeat. Denzel Freeman moves to 7-1 following the victory. And if anything, there's just heavyweights out there for them to fight. There's your Mohamed Usmans. There's your Hamdi Abdulwahab if he ever makes his way back. There will be all sorts of fellows out there. Dontell Mays, is he still in the UFC? I don't even know. But yeah, if this is the level of the UFC that we have, it's just, it's not pretty. I'll tell you that. And just for simplicity, I might as well just have Denzel Freeman fight. Gosh, who's coming off of a loss or something? Who'd Walter Walker just submit? I'm trying to remember. Walter Walker, who did he leg lock last? Louis Sutherland. Louis Sutherland can take on Denzel Freeman. And I believe there was a guy, Buchecka. Buchecka, whatever his name is. Was it like Martin Buchecka, whoever it was? I don't even know who he was, but he lost to, I think it was like Tybura or someone. I can't remember, but yeah, you could just have Marik Bujoh fight him. But yeah, this was an awful fight. We don't even need to sugarcoat it. And it did have me worried for how this card was going to go. But I did predict Marik Bujoh would win simply because he was an underdog. That was really my only reasoning, and Denzel Freeman won. But it is what it is. Heavyweight division has never been worse than it is today. After that, we had lightweight action as Nurullo Aliyev took it to Shamrock, and the Tajik Eagle remains undefeated. And you know what? He's pretty freaking good. 11-0, 3-0 in the UFC, and he'll end his 2025 going 2-0. He was a minus 340 favorite for a reason. Now, is he a decision machine? Yes. Yes, he is. But you know what? He showed some levels here. Round one, outstruck Shem on the feet, 28-12, defended two of his takedowns. Round two was outstruck 20-14, but landed a takedown to seal the round. And round three, Shamrock was beating him on the feet, and he was able to reverse a takedown and lock in a submission almost. And you know what? Just looked impressive. So Nurullo Aliyev gets the job done, and Shamrock will now move to being 12-2-1, losing his debut. But that's okay. Lightweight division runs deep. There are an unlimited number of fighters that he could take on. Trying to think of someone, you know, that he could potentially fight. Who's a good name? Who's a good name we could give him? I think Claudio Puelles. Is he still in the UFC? Claudio Puelles has lost 3 straight fights, so I don't know if he's still in the UFC, but he did just fight in September. So if he still is, Claudio Puelles versus Shamrock could be a fun fight. And as for Nurullo Aliyev, it's just a matter of which lightweight he should take on next. My money's going to be on Joaquim Silva. Joaquim Silva is just, you know, a run-of-the-mill, unranked lightweight. And, you know, it's just the name that comes to mind on who Nurullo Aliyev could fight. Just another test for him as he tries and moves up the rankings. But I'm pretty sure he's the only fighter from Tajikistan. So good job on him getting this done. It was more entertaining than the Denzel Freeman Marik Bujoh fight. But at the same time, it was still yet another decision. We were itching for something exciting, which is what we got in our third matchup of the evening, as Ismael Nuradiv destroys Ryan Loader. By the way, Ryan's nickname is Man of Steel. That boy is not a man of steel. That man may be a man of steel, but that boy has a chin of paper. Let me tell you that, as Ismael Nuradiv just starches him with the straight. I mean, Ryan Loader's lights put out cold, and I was loving him. I was absolutely loving it. I knew Ismael Nuradiv was a better fighter here. I really did. He had double the experience. He moves to 25-8 now, and he's gone win-loss through all his fights in the UFC. Since coming back in 2024, he's gone 2-1, only lost this year to Jun Young Park. So good job, Ismael Nuradiv, actually picking up his 13th career knockout and 19th. Career finish out of 25 wins, which is very good. So middleweight division, look out. You have yourself a young gun on the come up. And I would love for him to take on Azmat Bekov next. I know Azmat did just lose to Yuzri Belgori, so maybe Yuzri Belgori could be another name. But either Azmat Bekov or Yuzri Belgori would be a great next opponent for Ismael Nuradiv. As for Ryan Loader, he's gone 0-2 in the UFC this year, knocked out in round one in both, and is easily one of the worst Ultimate Fighter winners that I've ever seen in my life. There's literally no reason for Ryan Loader to still be in the UFC. They might keep him around, but if anything, I want to see a young gun coming off of Damas Quintero series take this guy on, because Ryan Loader, if you're getting starched like this at this point in your career at 34 years old, you're not going to go far. So I'm going to put Ryan Loader on my chop block. They might give him another shot, but man, just not impressive. Ishmael Nuriyev, though, very impressive. Love you, Ishmael Nuriyev, and he's only 29. Lots of time to continue to grow. He did have a funky hairdo, if you do want to go look that up. Next up, a bantamweight action as the older brother of Ilya Topuria, Alexander Topuria, took on Behzad Almakhan. And this is just two guys who are super high level squaring off. 47 significant strikes to 39, 55 total strikes to 42, and 2 of 7 on takedowns for 2 minutes of control time. Give Alexander Topuria the unanimous decision victory. And he had to grind this out. You know, round one, kind of a swing round, but last two rounds went really clear to Alexander Topuria, and he looked good. He really did, and Behzad is no joke. He really isn't. And the one thing I want to preface about him, he moves to 12-3. He's 1-2 in the UFC. His losses are Umar Nurmagomedov and Alexander Topuria, like legit the cousin of Khabib and the older brother of Ilya Topuria. I mean, come on. Come on, let's cut him some slack. So let's give Behzad not really a layup, but maybe like a different bantamweight for him to square off with. There could be someone like Colby Thickneys is the guy who Alexander Topuria actually beat earlier in February. So I think it would just be fun to just run that fight next because why not? They both lost to Alexander Topuria. Let's see who's the better fighter that has lost to him. So Topuria improves to 7-1, is now 2-0 in the UFC. 2-0 in 2025, and I think they're going to give him a big name next. Not necessarily like a big name in terms of ranking, but, you know, he could. Honestly, I'm going to go bold here. Number 15th ranked Marcus McGee. Give him the number 15th ranked Marcus McGee. My money is on Alexander Topuria. Being dead serious with you. So Behzad versus Colby Thickneys, I would love to see them run that next. As for Alexander Topuria, give him the 14th ranked Marcus McGee, 15th ranked Marcus McGee, 14th ranked Kyler Phillips, options like that. I'd even go 12 ranked Rob Font. Like, I think very highly of Alexander Topuria as we move into 2026. So decent matchup there. Out of all the fights so far that went the distance up to this point, this was probably the most entertaining, I would say. After that, we moved along and we got into a little scrap in our next one, which was very entertaining, might I say, as Abdulrahman Yakaev starches Rafael Cerquera. I mean, this was insane. If no one knew who Abdulrahman Yakaev is, I don't blame you because he was making his UFC debut. He had fought on Dana White's Contender Series in August 26th to be specific, and he landed a 30-second knockout. Very impressive. Here, he landed a 33-second rear naked chokehold, which started out with him starting the fight off, throwing a spinning kick, landing it, kind of getting blocked, landing a little combo, then landing a head kick, which dropped Rafael Cerquera. He then landed some brutal follow-up punches. When Cerquera went to get up, he locked in a rear naked choke, and it was just a matter of time before Cerquera tapped, and Abdulrahman Yakaev gets another 30-second finish. This kid's crazy. This kid is insane, and mind you, he's only 24. Biggest favorite on the card. This is now his 7th finish of his 8 career wins, and this is now his 4th career submission, so good stuff on him. But yeah, he's going places. He's definitely going to be on my radar heading into the new year. Light heavyweight division, look the frick out, because Abdulrahman Yakaev is here to play. You know me, I love matchmaking on the same card, and it may be a really big reach here, but Alonzo Menifield versus this guy would just be a collision of guys who go at it right off the rip. So I know it's bold, but I love matchmaking on the same card. And this was a layup fight. Yes, it was. So Cerquera is now 0-4 in the UFC. He's going to be cut, you know, of his 4 losses. He's been finished 3 times in round 1, actually twice in under a minute, funny enough. So that'll do it for Rafael Cerquera, who came in the UFC 11-0 and is now 11-4, funny enough. But he was good to get people layups and get good clips. But yeah, Abdulrahman Yakaev, 24 years old, hailing from Turkey. I mean, this guy is he's legit, and I like what I see. So I'm excited to see him fight next. Earlier in the year, Alonzo Menifield, I know it's a bit of a higher name, but I still think it's warranted to give him a shot, especially if Alonzo Menifield hovers around that 15th spot of the rankings. I like it. Abdulrahman Yakaev. After that, we got top 10 flyweight action as the number 7th ranked Alex Perez took down the number 8 ranked Asu Almabayev, and Asu will jump Perez from 8 to 7 following his round 3 rear naked choke. Great work here from Asu Almabayev. Really was getting his 10th career submission, 13th career finish now, and he'll improve to a very stellar 22-3 and after starting off the year with a short-notice main event loss to Manel Caper, he was TKO'd for the first time in his career. He's followed up defeating Jose Ochoa in July, who was a very tough prospect, and then submitting Alex Perez 22 seconds into round number three, might I add. I mean, Alex Perez was just worked. He really was. You know, round one, Asu outstruck him significantly, 20-18, landed a takedown. Round two, Alex Perez came back, outstruck him 21-13, landed three takedowns on him. But round three, Alex Perez would fail a takedown, resulting in his back immediately being taken, and he was immediately submitted. So great work, Asu Mabayev. You are an absolute savage. And the crazy thing is that, you know, I'd have thought he'd be fighting down coming next, but no. No, he's going to be ranked number seven. And he's going to be wrestling up, fighting up, I should say, but he's a wrestler, so I will say he will be wrestling up. And there's one name, which is just not on anyone's date, hasn't gotten a fight this year, the number four ranked Amir Albazi. So number four ranked Amir Albazi, the soon-to-be-ranked number seventh Asu Mabayev, is a very high-level matchmaking. And hey, both men have initials of AA, so we will figure out who the better AA is, very much so. But yeah, great work from Asu Mabayev, and there was a reason that he was the favorite in this matchup. As for Alex Perez, he will fall to 25-10, suffering his 10th career defeat. This is also the 8th time in his career he's been finished, and it is also the 3rd time by submission he has been finished, so... That is now a 2-fight losing streak. That is now make him 1-5 his last 6. There is no reason for Alex Perez to remain in the UFC. So Alex Perez will be cut, which does mean they will actually probably bring in a new new ranking for a flyweight. So whoever gets that nod, good job to you. And I already think I know who it's going to be, so we'll mention them in just a moment. But yeah, Alex Perez had he had his moments. You know, that main event knockout on Matthias Nicolau was awesome. Fought for the belt against Davison Figueiredo. Like, not many people can say they have fought for a UFC championship. All right, there's something to say to that. Also, you know, he was the guy that Alexander Pantoa last beat before getting a title shot. Just to let you know, before Alexander Pantoa became champion, he submitted Alex Perez. And this guy's being juicy at Formiga in the UFC before. So, good work so far, Alex Perez. I wish you the best if you do join another organization. But at the age of 33, your time in the UFC, I do believe, has come to an end. Similarly, I thought it was the end for one man here, but clearly it was not, as Nicholas Dalby wins a split decision over Saigid Izagakmayev. And was I upset? Maybe upset just because I picked Saeed and he didn't win, but at the end of the day, Nicholas Dalby hung in there and really showed that veteran status to grind out the victory. Totals from the fight, 26 significant strikes to 20 in favor of Dalby, 87 total strikes to 65 in favor of Dalby. Dalby goes 0-2 on takedowns, yet does manage to get 6.5 minutes of control time. Saigid goes 4-10 on takedowns to get 5 minutes of control time. So round one went to Dalby, round two went to Saigid, and round three was a flip round. Could have went either man's way, and they went with the 41-year-old Nicholas Dalby, which I love, dude. I really do. Dalby is such a dog. Like, this man is such a freaking warrior, and I'm ready to see what's next for him. I already have a name on my radar. It's Kevin Holland. I think this guy, him and Kevin Holland and Nicholas Dalby would bang. They would. They would make a banger of a fight. Let me tell you that. I can guarantee you that. So that's the next fight I want to see. And good for Dalby. Snapped his little 2-fight losing streak. First win in a long time, over a year. As for Saigid Izagakmayev, this should have been expected. You know, coming in 22-2, obviously a padded record from that portion of Eastern Europe or Eastern Asia, wherever he was from. And obviously, he hadn't fought in an MMA fight since 2022. Like, that is a fact not a lot of people know. And so the fact he was able to bring Nicholas Dalby to a split decision does hold some, you know, I guess, goodness. I don't really know. But yeah, I think him versus Andreas Gustafsson would be a very good fight next. Andreas is 1-1 in the UFC, had that fun win against Chaos Williams in June, and then ran to Renat Fakhretdinov in September, who starched him. So I think Andreas and Saigid would match up well, and we can see if Saigid can still hang with people in the UFC, because right now, I don't know, especially after this fight, if I'd be confident picking him in any future matchups. So keep that on your radar. He was a -340 favorite, and he didn't win. So big underdog cash from Nicholas Dalby at UFC Qatar. After that, we went on a streak a beautiful streak. And I mean, the only one that ruined the streak was Bilal Muhammad and Ian Gary. But we'll get to that in a second. But we started it off featherweight division, the debut of Luke Riley against Bogdan Grodd. Now, if you didn't know, Shamrock and Luke Riley, both fighters from Paddy Pimblett's gym. Paddy Pimblett was here. Of course, Shamrock lost to Nurullo Aliyev. And Luke Riley gets round one going, and Bogdan Grodd grapples him to death. 3 minutes and 55 seconds, 4 of 7 on takedowns. It's awful. Luke can't do anything. But you know who had a similar debut? Alex Pereira, who was taken down repeatedly by Andreas Michaldis, and then we get round two going, and he starches him with a knockout. And the same thing happened here. Luke Riley drops Bogdan Grodd in spectacular fashion and remains on him with the ground and pound, knocking him out unconscious. And Luke Riley is now 12-0 with 9 freaking knockouts. This kid's good. This kid's good. Ending the year 2-0 in 2025, and yeah, getting a little performance bonus due, that doesn't hurt you at all. So, really fun stuff for Luke Riley here. Congrats to him, and I'm ready to see him. Featherweight division, look the frick out, because Luke Riley is here, and he's ready to throw it down. And there's a fun matchup coming up, UFC 323, which makes me just think of the upcoming UFC 323 card, between Muhammad Naimov and Myron Santos, and whoever wins that will be on a 3-fight win streak inside the UFC. Now, obviously, Myron Santos is longer than that, but I would love to see Luke Riley square down with them next, especially if they're knocking out a guy in Bogdan Grodd who had really been tough to finish. You know, I know Tom Nolan had gotten the better of him in 2023, but he had really shown growth. He had his own knockout in February of this year. Obviously, the decision loss to Muhammad Naimov wasn't pretty in June, but yeah, great win for Luke Riley. Nothing but respect, and he walks away with a little 50K performance bonus. You can't hate that. Next up, oh man, might be my favorite performance. I kid you not, this might be my favorite performance from UFC Qatar. Kyoichi Horiguchi returns to the UFC for the first time in 9 years. Of course, Bellator and Rizin champion. Dude's a legend outside the UFC. Coming in against the 11th ranked Tagir Ulembekov. And Tagir been on a great spree. 4 straight wins. He had been 6-1 in the UFC, and he was looking good. He really was. And we get this fight going, and you can just kind of tell off bat that, you know, Kyoichi's kind of quicker, if you're asking me. He really is. And round one, Tagir managed to land a takedown, but on the feet, 16 significant strikes to 5. Total strikes 36-5, just staying on him. Then round two, Kyoichi was doing even better. Tagir actually went for a submission and takedown, failed it. Kyoichi ended up controlling him for 3.5 minutes. Tagir only landed 1 significant strike in round two. And round three, Tagir can't even land a significant strike as he is knocked down twice and is submitted with a rear naked choke standing. I mean, Kyoichi Horiguchi making this man look silly. He looked great. Kyoichi Horiguchi looked like a stud on this card. And yeah, this might be the one guy who could actually give Alexander Pantoa a run for his money. I kid you not. I kid you not. Underdog for some reason in this contest. 35 years old, make it 6 straight wins, gets his 6th career win by submission, 21st career finish, and he improves to 35-5. So, yeah, he's pretty freaking good, and I absolutely love this. So, Kyoichi will debut at number, I'm going to say 10 in the rankings. I would even put him higher, but in terms of who he's going to be squaring off with next, you just kind of got to do process of elimination. And I know Brandon Royval and Manel Cape are squaring off to end out the year, final main event of the year. I would love to see maybe him get the loser if he can't get a winner of that. And, you know, like I said, Amiral Bazzi is another great name. We've been looking at that for Usman Mabayev. And then even if Joshua Van loses to Alexander Pantoa, I hate to use Joshua Van as a stepping stone, but it would be a great way to get Kyoichi Horiguchi back up in the mix. So excited to see what's next for him, but he's coming back to the UFC and he's coming for that UFC championship. As for Tagir Ulembekov, tough defeat. Really is. There's no ifs, ands, or buts around it. It's tough to lose, but you lost to a really good fighter, so don't knock yourself too much. First time in his career that he's ever been submitted, which does suck, but, you know, he's still good. He really is. And, you know, the 14th ranked Joseph Morales, He's been putting on a good grappling performances so far through his last two wins, including winning the Ultimate Fighter. So I think that should be the next fight. Tagir Limbekov versus Joseph Morales. Make that the next matchup. However, Coach Horiguchi stole the spotlight here. He is such a beauty. And yeah, give this guy one more fight, then let's get him a title shot. Oh yeah, and if I didn't mention, he got a 50K performance bonus. Next up, heavyweight division, and I think I finally will admit I will stop with the Waldo Cortez Acosta slander. I mean, I still don't think he's incredible. I really don't, but he just had his, I think it was fourth fight of the year in 2025, and he for somehow, actually his fifth fight of the year, and he's ending the year 4-1, only losses a decision to Sergey Pavlovich. This is now the second time he's fought in November, and the second time he's gotten a round one knockout. Just hits Shamil Gaziev with a beautiful straight, drops him cold. I mean, I can't even speak. Waldo Cortez Acosta, props to you. And as for Shamil Gaziev, well, first time he's lost since March of 2024. It is what it is. That's all I'm going to say on that matter. But yeah, Waldo Cortez Acosta destroys Shamil Gaziev. A minute, 22 seconds is all it takes. And yeah, Shamil will remain at 11. I'd probably matchmake him next with Walter Walker. If you're asking me, maybe even Talashan Teixeira. We'll have to see. Now, as for Waldo Cortez Acosta, he's ranked at 6. Holmlo Maida is at 5. I'm moving Waldo into the top 5. I really am. There's two options on what to do next with Waldo Cortez Acosta. And that's either the number 2 ranked Alexander Volkov or the number 4 ranked Curtis Blaydes. Those are the options. If you ask me, just kind of matchmaking heavyweight, I think Gon's going to run it back with Aspinall. I think that's what you do there. I would do Alexander Volkov to take on Waldo Cortez Acosta. I like the matchmaking there. I would really like to see, there really isn't anyone else to throw up there. Derek Lewis, maybe? Derek Lewis versus... Oh, gosh, I don't even know. Curtis Blaydes, if we run that back, I don't know. But yeah, Waldo Cortez Acosta versus Alexander Volkov or Curtis Blaydes. That's what I think should be next there. And yeah, Waldo gets a 50K performance bonus. What an absolute stud. Absolutely amazing. Following that, we had another round one knockout. This one was just more sad, if anything, as Mitrek Orbai destroys Jack Hermanson. And then, honestly, this raises the question on why in the world is Mitrek Orbai not ranked in the UFC rankings, because this kid is clearly incredible. And when I say kid, this guy is 27 years old, but looks like he's 50 years old. Mitrek Orbai improves to 15-2. He will end his 2025 2-0 with two round one finishes. You can't beat that if you ask me. And this will be his 7th career win by knockout. So very impressive. 13 of 15 wins are finishes. Jack Hermanson and him going back and forth, looking very even, looking very good. Then he just lands a shot, lands on the ear. And then as Jack comes in, it gets hit on the shoulder and just was out cold. Lights out just like that. And a lot of people are going, oh, what a suspicious knockout. Why did he just fall so suddenly? Well, if you didn't know, Jack Hermanson had never fought at welterweight in his career, decided to drop 15 pounds for this after being knocked out cold by Gregory Rodriguez in June, and then got hit with the power of Mitrek Orbai. So it was just a recipe for disaster. Mitrek Orbai will be getting a big name next. I'm thinking the 15th ranked Dan Rodriguez, the 14th ranked Jeff Neal, dare I say the 12th ranked Gilbert Dorino Burns. As for Jack Hermanson, 2 straight L's, knocked out cold in both in 2025. He's now, he was win-loss already coming into this contest. And yeah, just not looking good for Jack Hermanson. He's had a great career. But he's 37, you know, he managed to have a couple main events in his time, he managed to have a fight of the night, he managed to beat former title challengers and Calvin Gastelum and Jacare Souza. I think Jacare fought for a belt, but I don't know, and, you know, he obviously beat Joe Pyfer, which is a good win as H. Well, so Jack, I really just, it's up to me. I would say he should retire. I would say Jack Hermanson needs to hang him on up because this did not look too pretty here. So as for Mitrek Orbai, get this man into a ranking matchup because he is so freaking good and I'm ready to see more of Mitrek Orbai. With that, we got into the top 3 matchups of the evening. And at number 3, the third to last matchup of the night, Volkan Ozdemir starches Alonzo Medfield. And this was just either, you know, are we going to see Volkan get knocked out, or are we going to see Alonzo? And in this case, Volkan put the pressure on him right off the bat, and Alonzo literally just stood there, trying to bob and weave or hold his hands up, and just Lee was getting clipped so well, and Volkan knocked him out, and he just dropped down. So great work here. Only takes a minute and 27 seconds, and Volkan Ozdemir dismantles him. He really did. And let's not act like Volkan is 3-1 in his last four since September of 2023. Only loss is Carlos Ulberg, who's fighting for a title next. So, like, come on. Come on. Put a little respect on Volkan Ozdemir's name, Zachary. My bad. Great win here for Volkan. This will be his 14th win by knockout in his career and his 16th finish of 21 career victories. He is ranked at number 9, and I would honestly bump him up to number 8. Now, in terms of what I think should be next for him, a couple options. I think the number 4 ranked Khalil Roundtree Jr., that would be a good fight. I also like the 6th ranked Jamal Hill. So either of those to be next for Volkan Ozdemir is what I want. Now, as for Alonzo Menifield, I do see two options on what to do next with him. I really would love to see Abdulrahman Yakayev, but he might not be ready for that. So my second option, which I am thinking about, is also the 15th ranked Zhang Mingyang. I just think both of these guys, coming off of some tough defeats, would be a great opportunity for them to, you know, get back in the win column. So Zhang Mingyang, Alonzo Menifield is what I want next there. And Volkan Ozdemir versus, I'm going to say, Jamal Hill should be also the next matchup. But good win for Volkan. He was the favorite for a reason. With that, we got into the co-main event of the evening. And yeah, Ian Garry, Bilal Muhammad. It surprisingly didn't suck all the energy out of the arena. I was a little bit surprised, you know, after our just finishing streak, including 3 straight round one knockouts, which is just impossible to top. You know, this was just whatever. It really was. 30-27, 30-27, 29-28. All rounds, Ian Garry outstruck Bilal. Best round was probably round 2. Defended all 7 takedowns Bilal threw at him. Fight did start out a bit shaky, and under the first minute, Ian Garry had not eye-poked Bilal, or he might have grazed his eye, but he cut him with his finger right off the rip, and it was kind of like, oh, that looks painful. That does not look pleasant whatsoever. And lo and behold, he was able to push through it, so props to Bilal. You have to give him some credit, but for Bilal Muhammad, after being on an incredible undefeated streak, this is now 2 straight losses. Not the kindest 2025 for Bilal Muhammad. I will say, had this been 5 rounds, it might have gone different. But at the same time, Ian looked great. 2-0 in 2025 for him. 0-2 in 2025 for Bilal Muhammad. And weirdly enough, Ian Garry is going to be now ranked number 2 in the world as everyone's going to get bumped down a bit. I think we're going to put Bilal at 3, Michael Morales at 4, Shavkat at 5. And Carlos Prates at 6. Looks like that's how it's going to go. Now, what to do next is the question. Well, if you ask me, Bilal Muhammad and Kamaru Usman have kind of some beef, and I say we just run that because they're 2 dudes in their late 30s, and there's not really any reason for them to be fighting anyone else. Now, you could also have Bilal Muhammad try and break in another contender again, such as Gabriel Bonfim, such as Joaquin Buckley, such even as Mytebek Orelbay, dare I say. So, you could do that, but I think a Kamaru Usman fight would be equally as good. Now, as for Ian Garry, now that we have this sorted out, we can determine what to do at welterweight. Now, in terms of who has been the most impressive, I would argue that Michael Morales versus Islam Makhachev would be phenomenal. But something tells me the UFC is either going to go with Ian Garry or right for a double title shot against Ia Topura, where Ia Topura tries to become a 3-division champion. Or you view it as Islam trying to become a champion again at lightweight. I don't know which way they're going to go, so we'll have to see. But yeah, I would say Ian Garry is a great option if we need to give Islam Makhachev a title defense, because we already have that Irish versus Russian connection. If we really think about this, Ian Garry beat the last man to hold the championship. I guess JDM was, but you get what I'm saying. So we could run that. If you don't want to give him a title shot, yeah, you have Michael Morales, you have Jack Della Maddalena. You have options here. So it's really tough to say what you're supposed to do in this situation. But if you ask me, let's just give Ian Garry a title shot, because why not? Russia versus Ireland, run it back again, and Islam would destroy him, which I don't actually hate Ian Garry as much as I once did, so I will give him that. Ian Garry improves to 17-1 and will end his year going 2-0 in 2025. With that, we got into the main event, and thankfully, Armin decided to show up and show out and got himself a little 50K performance bonus as the number 1 ranked lightweight submits the number 6 ranked Dan Hooker in round number 2. There's just levels to this. And the grappling was just nowhere near close for Dan Hooker and Armin Saruki. And here Armin takes it to him. Round one, 1 of 3 on takedowns, 3 minutes of control time. Round two lasted 3.5 minutes, 2 minutes and 45 seconds. Of round two was Armin in control. He was hunting for submissions. Eventually was able to get the arm triangle from mount and locks it in. And Dan Hooker was forced to tap. 6th career submission for Armin Saruki and the 15th finish in his career of his 23 career wins. His winning streak is now 5, and yeah, here's the thing. I don't know what to do with Armin, because he's fighting for a belt next, but there's also rumors that Paddy Pimblett might just be getting the next title shot, which I don't care. Like, give me Paddy versus Ian Topura. That would feed families, but in terms of skill-wise, MMA, in terms of just deserving it, Armin should be next in line for a lightweight championship fight. So will he be fighting next? No, but whoever wins that matchup, he should be fighting next. So I don't think Armin should fight anyone else except if they are going to be holding a championship. That is my humble opinion there. Now, as for Dan Hooker here, I mean, just simple. Dan Hooker was taken down and submitted, and it's always been a weak point of his game. Snaps his 3-fight winning streak, which is unfortunate. Crazy. This is Dan Hooker's first loss since 2022, March. So props to him. Now, what do we do next with Dan Hooker? Well, he called out Renato Moicano saying, "We both suck. We've both lost, so let's run it." And that's a perfect fight to make. Number 10 ranked Renato Moicano and the number 6 ranked Dan Hooker. Let's just make that. You could even have that be a fight night main event. Like, that is a fight people want to see. So that's why I say run that fight next. If Dan Hooker was kind of talking, and, you know, it was kind of sad. He was kind of saying, you know, he's accepted. He's probably not going to be fighting for a belt as he's 35 now. He just lost here to Armin. But he's 24-13. And you never say never. You never can. Renato Moicano was never going to be close to a title shot. And look at the circumstances which allowed him to get one. Did he win? No. But he's able to fight for one. So Dan Hooker, just stay in the mix. And I still think that we should try and maybe get Justin Gaethje versus Dan Hooker. Try and do Max Holloway versus Dan Hooker. We could do Benoit St. Denis versus Dan Hooker. Dan Hooker is just such a fun fighter. I just want him to stay active. Now, he did take some damage, so I have no idea the next time we're going to see him. But hey, it was fun while it lasted. Armin Tsarukian dominates the night. And I'm pretty sure he's actually the number 14th ranked pound-for-pound fighter. So on the men's pound-for-pound list, he's actually probably going to jump Bilal Muhammad at 13. And that actually raises a question for me. Bilal Muhammad was ranked at number 13 on the men's pound-for-pound. Does that mean Ian Garry is now a pound-for-pound fighter in the world? We need to really answer that UFC. But yeah, Kazar was a success. Very happy with it. It's going to get some good ratings. Going to do well in the rankings. We do our end-of-year review, and we just move on. And this was the final event, fight night, I should say, with a crowd. Because when we proceed forward to end out our year in December, we will have a pay-per-view. That is UFC 323, and then the final card of the year, UFC Vegas 112, will be at the Apex. But UFC 323, they have loaded up. I mean, these prelims are amazing. Myron Santos, Ultimate Fighter winner, in action, like we had mentioned. Mamsuro Dumalik is back, finally. Iwo Baranowski makes his Dana White's Contender Series debut, taking on Ibo Azan. He's coming off of this past season. Edson Barbosa and Jalen Turner on the prelims. Marvin Vettori versus Bruno Ferreira on the prelims. Nazim Sadikov versus Ferzayam is going to be the one fight you have got to watch on December 6th. Macy Barber, Kareem Silva. Hopefully Macy can make it to the octagon, if you ask me. Terrence McKinney and Chris Duncan is going to be violence. Grant Dawson and Manuel Torres. Someone's getting put on a highlight reel. And this main card, Jan Blachowicz, Bogdan Guskov. Henry Cejudo versus Peyton Talbot in one of the most random fights I've ever seen made. Brandon Moreno, Tatsuya Taira, and the two title fights, Alexander Pantoa versus Joshua Van, and Merab Dvalishvili versus Peter Yan. So it's going to be amazing. You know, I don't doubt that in the slightest, and I'm pumped for it. I really am. I'll be working like a dog that day. I work 8 to 5, and then I actually work, I believe it's 8 or on Sunday. I don't know. I work like, I'll be working like 11, 12 hours on Sunday. It's going to be ridiculous. But then I do get Monday off, and then I do have a little 4-day work week before I get the rest of December off. So it all kind of ends up working out, if you ask me. But after that, we will have one final event, and that will be on December 13th. And for the foreseeable future, this is the final event in the ESPN era, which is just crazy to think about. The ESPN era is coming to an end, and the final fight before the Paramount era will be Brandon Royval versus Manel Cape, which these two have been scheduled to fight so many times. I actually pray we're able to see that fight because it would be a banger. Also on here, Amanda Lemos, Jillian Robertson, that should be pretty good. Giga Chikadze versus Kevin Vallejos is confirmed. Heavyweight action, Kenny Inchukwu, Marcus Prochazka, loser is definitely getting cut. Janderson Brito and Melsik Bagdasarian in the featherweight banger. Melkus Acosta takes on Morgan Cherie and is going for his fourth win of the year. And as for Morgan Cherie, he's looking to follow up his nasty knockout in Nashville, getting a win here. And then one of my favorite ones here, Cesar Almeida versus Cesar Olakajasek, both of them coming off a highlight reel knockouts in their last matchups. And that's just a few. They're still adding fights. This is just what I see on UFC stats right here. And yeah, we have a big rounding out the year coming. But yeah, for November, that's all we have. This is actually my last episode of November. The next week, I'm really grinding away at work. I also want to be able to enjoy Thanksgiving. It's been, you know, I don't really believe in like stress or anything. You know, I always know that I can handle things, but you know, it's just a lot to do at times to try and go over everything. But the one thing I am looking forward to is actually the UFC events wrapping up, and then I can do my end of year reviews because we're going all out this year. Male fighter of the year, female fighter of the year, fight of the year. We're going to be going, what are the top five best knockouts of the year, best submissions? Who is the breakout fighter? Who is the comeback fighter of the year? What was the comeback fight of the year? And the one question which has been eluding me all year, who is the rookie of the year and who is the fighter of the year? So we're going to be answering all that. And I'll be ranking every single fight night main event, every single pay-per-view, every single title fight, all what name you name it, we're going to be ranking it in terms of UFC. So that's all I got for this episode. And thank you guys so much for listening. I really do appreciate the support. We're almost at 10,000 downloads of the podcast, which is just amazing. If you ask me, I really, truly do appreciate it. And yeah, I'll be back previewing, recapping, all sorts of stuff. We'll be back December 1st. Don't you worry. So, ladies and gentlemen, you guys have an amazing rest of your November. Have a happy Thanksgiving. And you already know what I'm going to say. I say it at the end of every episode. So if you listen to every episode, you'll know. I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.